The IMG Roadmap is the only podcast dedicated to coaching international medical graduates and success blueprints for this unique pathway. I am Dr. Nina Loom, your host, a previous IMG turned hospital medicine physician, healthcare administrator, speaker, and coach. I empower, encourage, and equip you with actionable steps that you can take towards the residency position of your dreams. Hi, guys. Welcome to another episode of the IMG Roma podcast. I have a very special guest today. We happen to have graduated from the same medical school just at different times. And we actually met recently through Instagram. Isn't it amazing how social media connects us with other people that we probably would have never meet in real life, but then you have just a lot more in common when you do meet? Today's guest is Dr. Anya Maiechi, and she's a psychiatrist with fellowship training in the Michigan area. Welcome on board, doctor. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi. Thanks so much for having me. It's so awesome meeting you, finding another alum, someone who's also doing pretty well. So I am an IMG, a Caribbean or U.S. Caribbean IMG. I went to the University of St. Eustatius in the Dutch Caribbean. It's now called the American University of Integrative Sciences, and I finished in 2013. And then I matched to a program in psychiatry in Baltimore, Maryland. And then after the 4 years of the general training, I did another year in forensic psychiatry there. So that finished in 2018, and then I jumped right into locum tenens work. So that's what I'm doing right now. I'm originally from Maryland, but I'm now in Michigan doing an assignment.
Awesome, awesome. So can you walk us a little bit more into your match journey as far as how did you apply into the psychiatry? What was that process like for you?
Sure. So I knew from my first rotation that I wanted to do psychiatry. And I think just throughout my medical journey, I realized a lot of my path has been intuitive. I just figure out things along the way. So when I got to that hospital, which eventually was where I ended up training, I was just like, I loved it. I loved my attendings. I liked working with the other medical students at the site and the nursing staff. And that was my second rotation. So I knew from the jump, that's what I was going to do. So keeping that in mind, I tried to do really well in my other rotation so I could try to get some good letters of recommendation. And of course, making sure I did well in my boards. So we finished a few years apart. And back when we were in med school, it was really important to have a 99. Remember that on the bottom number? So I was really trying to make sure that I got 99s on my exam, which I did at least for step one. I got in the 230s. And so when it came down to applying to residency, I actually had a mentor who I met during my base psych rotation. And he told me that it's really important to be a known entity to programs you're applying to. So I did additional electives there. I made sure I had a letter from a psychiatry attending. And then I just went ahead and once I started getting interviews, I tried to get to know the residents in the program, some of the attendings. And for the programs I really liked, I circled back and made sure to keep in contact through email so I could let them know I was really interested and so they could remember me when it came time for the match.
Right. I really appreciate you sharing that with us. And I think the one thing that stood out to me was, you know, you ended up matching at a place that you, at a hospital that you had some experience with. And sometimes I get this question from IMGs is they always ask, should we try to do our electives at hospitals that we want to match at? And how do we go about finding such hospitals? What would you say to that?
Oh, absolutely. If it's possible to do that, I would do an elective. Because again, it's really important, especially being on the other side, seeing how the recruitment process is. If someone remembers you when they have a positive impression of you, you know, it helps your case for trying to get into the program. I won't say that always helps, of course. And I'll actually say I was discouraged from ranking this program number one, because it was actually my top choice where I matched, because it's a program that traditionally doesn't take IMGs, at least in the first year. So when I did match, I was the only IMG in a class of 17.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty impressive. So what ended up happening is you made it an IMG-friendly program by virtue of being the only IMG there in a class of 17.
And yes.
I think that definitely speaks to
you know, we don't need to have some of the stereotypes or some of the barriers that we put in place ourselves on the ability for us to match in any hospital because of maybe the fact that we cannot identify with another IMG that's currently there or that has been there in the past. I think if you meet criteria for a program, you should definitely still seek application, even if you don't see another IMG, you know, on the resident list or you don't feel like it's IMG friendly, quote unquote. So, you know, with sharing your story, you know, you're telling us, hey, I had to do well on step one. And I did. And you got a 99th, you were in a 99th percentile, which would have been in the 230s at the time. And so some IMGs that are listening still maybe are just overwhelmed with the thought of USMLE and doing well on the exam, talk list of doing exceptionally well. So can you talk to us about maybe any tips? I mean, seeing as you did fairly well on step one, you may have been, you know, a few years back, but what are some key points for studying? And this can come from a perspective of, you know, a psychiatrist that maybe has helped people work through anxiety, which is a big part of test-taking performance or test performance. So do you have any tips to share with us?
Yeah, and I think that's a great point about test anxiety because I definitely had that when I was taking my boards. I would say the top advice I have is to do really well during the basic sciences years. I was very strict with myself. So every semester, I deactivated Facebook or whatever social media I had. I mean, I was this tunnel vision, making sure I got all the material. As I moved along, I was able to tutor other students. And so the more you tutor, you know, you realize your gaps in your knowledge base. And so you eventually get to a point where that information comes to you very well. Trying to do possibly as well as possible on tests, on shelf exams, if your school offers that, especially the comprehensive one, which is said to be a good indicator of how well you'll do on the actual step one exam. So that was my key thing, trying to do well in basic sciences, and tutoring really helped too. I didn't actually take a prep course because at least at the University of St. Eustatius, we had a semester, which that was somewhat incorporated. So I already had that before I did extra studying.
Wow. Thanks for sharing your tips on that. Did you experience any challenges along the way? Because, you know, we're hearing, wow, perfect story, right? Like she goes to the Caribbean, she does really well on step one and moves into hospital that she eventually matches into. I think sometimes IMGs only hear that part, but they don't realize that with every successful story, there has been challenges. So did you experience any along the way? And what lessons did you learn from that?
I did, and I'll actually say my challenges started before I even got to medical school. So when I went to college, I struggled there a lot, and I probably had shades of some anxiety and depression. And so I actually had a very, very, very low GPA. And so I got to a point where I was like, wow, medical school doesn't really seem realistic. And you know, when I was telling people that I wanted to go to med school and they, you know, most people just focus on the numbers, they're just like, well, honestly, they're like, you should consider another career, maybe do post-baccalaureate classes to boost your GPA. And so I was feeling really hopeless. So I decided to take a year off before I even went to medical school. And I did some research working with a neurologist, and it was actually working along his neurology residence where I was like, you know, taking away like that the fact they were in medical or residency at that point, I didn't see myself as being much different from them. They just had on a white coat and I didn't at that point. So that's when I decided to just take the leap and apply to the Caribbean and go to St. Eustatius. Even though I actually had a couple interviews at US schools, I just felt that path was better for me. So I would say my challenges came before. And I recognized my own strengths in that process, taking that time off to do a lot of introspection and realize what I really wanted. So that way, when I started medical school, I was able to really buckle down and hustle and work really hard. So it sounds, I agree with you, it sounds like a perfect story, but it really came from a really low, dark place.
Right. I understand that. I think challenges happen to us in waves. There are some years that are better than others. And sometimes I feel like, I don't know. In my head, I feel like there is just, it doesn't matter when it happens. It's just that it's going to happen and you're going to learn a lesson that helps you carry on for the next phase. So for you, maybe it was before medical school, but quite all right. It prepared you so that you could breeze through, you know, what was coming. And so it doesn't make it any less of a lesson or any less of a challenge than the person who maybe experiences some of those things later on in life. So I think there's always a lesson that we can take from your story, really. So usually we like to, you know, ask if there was any part of your education that was non-traditional. Was there a gap year? Was there any lag time? Anything that you had to compensate for when it came to applying into residency?
Aside from my own personal gap year between undergrad and medical school, I essentially went pretty straight through. So I started medical school in fall 2009, left spring 2011, and then took step one a few months later. And then within a week, started my first clinical rotation. And then it was essentially boom, boom, boom for that. But I think the part of that is because St. Eustatius had a pretty good clinical program in that they're able to get students through rather quickly. So I feel grateful in my journey. I was able to kind of go straight through.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's a blessing in itself. Definitely a very great story there. So another question that I want to ask you, as a person who went to a Caribbean medical school, looking back, if someone was starting out or they're currently at AUIS or at any other Caribbean school, what are some things that you wish you did differently?
Some things I wish I did differently would be to seek out more mentors along the way. I felt like I had to do a lot on my own, which is sort of inherent when you go to school abroad. And that would have been through joining more professional organizations. I did join the American Psychiatric Association, but that was a little bit closer to when I started residency. But perhaps doing that earlier on, like third year, just to get an idea from people what might lie ahead. And then also, I think honestly, I pushed myself out of fear, because we hear there's such high attrition rates in Caribbean schools and not a lot of people get through. So I was really scared about being a statistic. So I didn't necessarily give myself a lot of time, especially my clinical years, to just let loose. So I would really encourage self-care and confidence, knowing that even though it's not a traditional path, it's one that you can be successful in.
I totally agree. Definitely agree. I think knowing fairly well that it's a competitive process by virtue of being or basically choosing to become an international medical graduate, I think that should be enough for us to sort of develop that gusto to be able to push through and do things at the right time. I usually say the best way to keep yourself competitive if you go to the Caribbean is to stay on track with your U.S. counterparts. So I don't recommend that you go to the Caribbean and change the pathway of a medical student. You should be trying to mimic exactly what you would have done if you were in a medical school in the States. That's the best way to optimize your Caribbean medical education. The minute we start, you know, deviating from the norm or creating unintentional gaps, and by unintentional, I mean, you know, with COVID-19, this will be a gap for some students that was not intentional. Mm-hmm. So unintentional gaps, I think, is they're best avoided. But you can't really avoid them if you don't start planning early. And that becomes an area where a lot of INGs get bit, is because they haven't really had time to think through the decision that they've made going to the Caribbean and planning accordingly thereafter. So thanks for bringing that point up. I think that was a really good point. So a few more questions for you before we let you go. So from your observation looking back, I'm sure you meet and hear from IMGs now who are still starting out. And do you have any special recommendations for those that are working towards a residency application process?
Take a deep, deep breath. And really, I would say self-care is really important. That's just managing the anxiety, because there's a lot of uncertainty when it comes to applying to residencies at IMG, from like how many programs to apply to will I match at all. So I really do believe in being that known quantity. If you like a program, send them a handwritten note. I mean, some people speak against that, but I really do think they're the little things that help you to be more memorable, especially if it's coming from a genuine place. Again, trying to, like you said, I love the way you phrased it, staying on par with U.S. medical students, making sure you're hitting everything as possible in the same milestone so you can get your application on time and do your application early I think some people hem and haw, getting too much wrapped in their minds about like what to do, that they end up procrastinating, and that might be to their detriment. So trying to stay on track.
Yeah, definitely agree. So, you know, what if we have an IMG that's listening right now or international medical student and they would like to connect with you, maybe because they have an interest in psych? Can we connect with you? How do we do that? Where can we find you?
Yeah, so I'm mostly on Instagram at this point. So they can find me at AndCHISAYS, AndCHISAYS.
Okay, so guys, we'll have that in the show notes so you can click one click to her profile. So make sure you just check that out in the show notes below. So thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate your advice. We appreciate your insight. But we like to know one thing. We like to know if you have a mantra for success. What is your one thing? What do you hold on to? It could be a quote. It could be a mindset. It could be something you tell yourself. Do you want to share that with us?
Yes, I have many, but the one I really follow, and it's actually in my bio on Instagram, it's I'm following my bliss. And for me, that means I follow what feels good, what feels intuitive to me, which has been a lot of my path, especially in medicine. Right now I'm a traveling psychiatrist. I do locum tenens. And I remember feeling really good traveling during the clinical years in medical school. And then now that I get to do that as a career, it's so awesome and it feels right. And a lot of the decisions I made in medical school really added up to where I am right now as well. So I really encourage people to listen to their intuition. I'll give one last example before we wrap up. So as far as my match list, like I was saying, the program I eventually matched to didn't take many IMGs, especially the first year. And I was told not to rank that program. I was told to aim for a program that more likely would take me. And so that sit well with me. And so I ended up still keeping it number one. I was so exhilarated when I saw my match notice. So following what feels good to you, even if other people are maybe telling you not to do it. And a lot of people do say those things out of fear, but you know yourself best. So definitely trust yourself.
I love it. I love it. But you just opened another can of worms for me because I got some more questions now.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was just thinking about this. You know, I talk to a lot of IMGs. And so I know they're whenever I listen to another attending, I know in my head, I'm already thinking, if one of my folks were listening to this, like one of the students that I mentor or coach, they're going to have this question and that question. So I kind of want you to answer this for me, because there could be some of them that are starting out. So they're year one, M1, and they're not sure how long it takes to train in residency for psych. And then they're not sure how it's broken down, particularly because you made the comment of this program not accepting IMGs in the first year. So can you break down what the routine psychiatry residency curriculum looks like? I mean, without going into so much detail, but can you break out that process, what the years are, the PGY1 all the way through, and what they can expect?
Yeah, so of course, every program is going to be different, but at least for mine, usually the first year is an intern year is devoted, half of it is to psychiatry, so just doing some introductory rotations. And the second half is more medical, so we do several months of internal medicine. We do a neurology rotation because psychiatrists are actually board certified under the same certifying body as neurologists. So we have to have that to be board eligible. And then we also got emergency medicine experience. I know some psych programs offer ICU rotations as well. So that's typically the first year. And then the second year is often devoted to inpatient psychiatric work. So working on a psych unit or psych ward. There's consult work where psychiatrists work on medical and surgical units. And that's pretty much the bulk of that second year. And then the last 2 years is devoted to outpatient psychiatry work. So in many programs, we have our own psychotherapy patients that we work with, or those that we get to do medication management. So a lot of people don't realize this, but psychiatrists are actually trained in psychotherapy. So it's in that latter part of the training program that that's experienced. So the reason why I said my program doesn't accept in the first year is because, I actually can't really speak to that, but the program itself tends to take transfers from other specialties. So we would have residents from pediatrics. We had an ophthalmology resident. So they tended to come in the second year.
Okay, got it. And then the other question I was going to ask you, which I know could potentially come up to a listener, is you mentioned having that year of doing research in neurology actually prior to going to the Caribbean. Did you ever list that experience on your ERAS application as part of your research experience? And was it beneficial for you later on?
Yes, I definitely put that there as my research experience. And even now as an attendee, I'm very clinical, so I'm glad I had that research experience. It was instrumental, honestly, because if I didn't do that job, I don't think I'd be here today, actually, because I got exposure to seeing how residents work, a bit of a training experience, and clinical work through neurology. Just in the minimum to discount that I actually wanted to be a neurologist, because that's what I thought I was going to go into. So yes, that neuro background still helps me now as a psychiatrist.
That's awesome. So I guess, you know, for the IMG listening, your experiences do not start in medical school. I say this because I get this question all the time, you know, I did this in undergrad and I have this research. Is that even applicable for now? Every experience that you go through in life is yours and you should own it. So if you have experience in research, whether it was in engineering or whatever, and you eventually and find yourself applying into orthopedics, please put down your ERAS application because it's still your experience, because eventually all your experiences cumulatively do result in who you are today. So I really just wanted to point that out because I was thinking about that while you were talking. And I thought that's a question I've gotten from IMGs in the past is, do we only talk about our work from the day one of medical school? But in reality, you didn't choose to go to medical school the day you started medical school. It has been a work in progress, and everything that you've done really adds up to, you know, how you do come out at the end of training. So I just thought that was a really good point to relay to our audience. Well,
oh yeah, that's great. Especially in psychiatry, because when you undergo the application process, they really do see applicants from a more holistic standpoint, looking at your life story. So they're not just looking at your medical school experience or looking at where you were coming from before that.
Yeah. So why don't you just tell us about, you know, for the applicant that's interested in psychiatry, can you just tell us, you know, what makes a well-rounded resident or a well-rounded applicant, I should say?
So I would say to be a well-rounded applicant, it helps to have life experience. And those things can come up from your path before medical school. If you're a non-traditional student, meaning you took some time before medical school, really highlighting that aspect of you and how that shaped you into wanting to be a psychiatrist, for instance. They definitely look at board scores, but I think at least in psychiatry, we understand that, you know, there's more to a person than just that. So also clearly showing why you want to go into psychiatry, doing elective rotations, doing volunteer work regarding mental health. If you're interested in writing, you know, trying to publish, you don't necessarily need to write research articles. But nowadays, even if you write to news publications and things like that, you know, those things are looked upon favorably because that shows your interest in your willingness to be an advocate.
Yeah. And then when it comes to letters of recommendations in your field, how are those looked upon? Are the applicants supposed to bring in, you know, all three letters from the same specialty? Is variety appreciated? Can you speak a little bit on that?
Yeah. So, and my experience is limited. I did participate in some recruitment cycles and residency, but it helps to at least have one letter from psychiatry, because we already know you want to go into psychiatry, so that just cements that. But we also want to know how you've done in other medical fields or specialties too, because ultimately psychiatrists are also always working with other fields, other specialties, especially if they're doing consult work. So we want to know what you're like there as well, how they see you.
Yeah, definitely. And okay, very well. I'm trying to think of any other questions that someone may have for you, but I'm sure we can find you on Instagram and they can connect with you. Again, we'll have all that information in the show notes. Thank you so much for sparing your time to spend with us. We really appreciate having you on. We appreciate your wisdom and for sharing your life experiences in order to help us make better choices.
Thank you for having me.